Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments or questions that you'd like to make during this broadcast, feel free to call them in at area code 646-716-4893. Or if you are feeling a little radio shy, you can feel free to email me, or I can bring a question to our guest at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just wanted to make a brief announcement that as the weeks are passing by, we are getting closer and closer to our healing weekend, October 3rd and October 4th here in Philadelphia. This will promise to be a very dynamic, wonderful weekend. There will be women from all over the country, as well as Canada and possibly the United Kingdom, coming here for this event, all with the same goal and all of us ready to heal together. And I think just validating your experiences through others, because we do feel so isolated and because you always feel like you're the only one going through this, is such a valuable, you know, thing to have in your life. I know the women who have gone through this before, but many of them have returned more than once or twice just to keep on target. But just moving ahead and meeting women who can give you that support for the rest of the year will truly change your life. So if you're interested in the weekend, write to me at bonkay@aol.com. There is no charge for this weekend other than your cost of a group rate at the hotel and your meals. And that's it. So certainly I know it costs a lot of money for people to get to Philadelphia from all over. So this is my gift to our women, having this weekend once a year. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce a very special guest who was with us last year, and I was just so impressed with her. Her name is Dr. Karen Huffer. And Karen, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Bonnie. I'm so glad to be here with you again.
And I was just in awe of you. I met you through another way, through another author who wrote a book, and you were kind enough to be on my book show, and you had so many amazing things to say. I've learned so much from you and your book. And you are an advocate, but before we even get into that, you know, you're also a licensed marriage and family therapist, right?
Yes.
So you're certainly
I'm licensed
with
in Nevada, marriage and family therapy. It had a long, many years of private practice.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you've worked with many women, I'm sure, who have been in abusive types of situations.
All kinds. Some, as you deal with, more secret than others in many cases. But so many layers of abuse are going on. And, of course, where I work is when it hits the court system. So I'm the one that is there advocating when these various complicated problems wind up in court and trying to be sure that each person under the federal law gets equal access and equal protection.
Now, even though you don't specialize per se in this particular question that I'm going to ask you, maybe you could give us some insight just with your background of knowing about the court and law. It seems to me very inconsistent that this is a state law where states vary from state to state when it comes to divorce and all these issues surrounding divorce. Do you find that difficult when you're dealing state to state?
Yes, extremely difficult. And worse than that, it goes from county to county and court to court and judge to judge. We just don't have the consistency that we need. So one of the things that I'm putting out, because I work under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the thing that many people don't understand is once you have been through a traumatic experience, you very often have an injury. And it's a diagnosable injury. At that point, you need help in the court. You need accommodations. You need to come under that federal law so you are protected. And what we have now, speaking of the lack of consistency, is that we don't have a standard of care. Because no matter what brings you there, something has traumatized you, something has gone wrong. You are in some kind of need. And when you get there, you have to be sure that you can handle what comes at you. And people feel like they walk into a house of mirrors. They absolutely thought that they could go in and tell the judge what really happened. And the judge, as a fatherly figure, would mete out justice and everything would work out okay. They get in there and find it's a game of words. It's a bullying power game. Adversarial, you walk in very often and you face lies. And one of the most important things that I deal with is what those lies do to you because they take on a life of their own.
Now, well, the women that I work with primarily, you know, come from abusive types of relationships, not necessarily physically abusive, but certainly emotionally and verbally abusive. And you know, many of us, it's just, it's no coincidence, it's just the character, the nature of the person that we're marrying, come out of marriages where there was a lot of narcissism, sociopathy, and also borderline personalities that we're dealing with. And a woman many times isn't very weakened before she can even get to the point of getting a divorce. And a lot of these men are extremely manipulative, and they feel very much alone while they're going through this process, and that is the point of advocacy, am I right? Having someone there to be your advocate?
Very much, because if you are traumatized, a certain area in your brain called Broca's area will interfere with expressive speech. And the one skill that you need the most at that point is the ability to express yourself and to get information. But what has happened, and Evan Stark, a professor at Rutgers University, wrote the book Coercive Control. It's a wonderful book because it really has to do with what happens to a person when they are oppressed, and very often their civil rights are taken away. if you deal with a manipulative enough person, they are attacking your civil rights. It should actually be illegal when it gets to an extreme level. But many of the people that I encounter who have been through these kinds of experiences where you find that your husband is having an affair with another man or a man, and you say, I can't even compete with that. I, what do I do? And then you've got a family, you've got the debts, you've got the friendship. So many factors go into it. And now it's being exploded wide open because we have a Caitlyn Jenner now who is showing that it is not as difficult as it was at one time to change gender and to admit this and to be open about it. So it's going to be a different world for your people and those I work with in terms of how the entire court looks at it, how the community looks at it.
I think the sad thing, and of course, just have working with these marriages for over 30 years that are very detrimental to the parties involved, and I certainly understand the struggle of gay men, but at least they know the struggle they're having. It's blindsiding women who they don't tell the truth to, and women who have to suffer for years not understanding that they are not the cause of the problem. You know, and the torment that they go through, that really the women to me are the real heroes, not the guys who decide 30 years into a marriage to come out. But that's another situation. But the thing is that a lot of the, you know, courts that I feel, you know, they don't take certain things into consideration. And when it comes to these marriages, I really feel that women don't get the kinds of considerations that they deserve. And I don't know if there's any way to ever change that. I know that I wanted to start a movement for something called His Fault Divorce. Because no fault divorce is commonly accepted everywhere. But isn't it true, though? It's not your fault. You went into this marriage with all good intentions, and you were the best wife you could be. And 30 years into the marriage, your husband comes and tells you, well, the reason things aren't quite working the way you were hoping to is because I've now found myself and I'm gay. Now, if you're getting a divorce, is that your fault? You didn't know this information when you got into the marriage, so how can it be a no fault? There is a fault.
Well, we've turned into a no-fault country, and I deal with that in my book. There has to be attribution, or society does not improve. It's only if we attribute what went wrong someplace and we confront, it's my blaming chapter, you know, and we confront what happened. Did they intend to do it? Did they do it because they were lying to themselves? Were they pretending to themselves not to be gay? If the betrayal is intentional and when they know it's hurting you, they continue, then it's the worst kind of betrayal that you can have, and it certainly is a fault. But the courts are not usually going to do that. What we find is that the courts are not very kind. The courts divide property, and they treat children like property. And in these breakups with one gay person, the problem is that the children have strong feelings about it, and they feel betrayed. That was my dad. Why is he dressing like a woman? You know, and then many times, I mean, I've been to these groups, and I see, and they don't dress well as women. You know, they don't have the shape. They don't have... So it isn't working for them there either in terms of them feeling good about themselves. It ends up a disaster for a whole family unless they really get some serious counseling
and
help.
Well, I think there's a lot of collateral damage with it. And we're not, you know, I would say that we're just getting this year, I've had maybe 7 or 8 women contact me whose husbands are transgender. And it is an extra, you know, set of circumstances that, even with a gay husband that you don't deal with. And it's really confusing, and some of us just can't make much sense out of it. And so I just stopped trying. You know, I just give these women our support because they need it. Some of them have husbands who transition, but they still want to stay married. And the women come to me and say, look, I don't want to be a lesbian. You know, I feel like I'm a lesbian. I don't want to go to bed with someone who has breasts and who's a woman. And it is very upsetting and confusing. And yes, the children, once again, they're the ones who have to deal with this and have to go through the stigma. And even though it's come out much more than it used to be, certainly when I was growing up, it was something you never even heard of with transgender. You know, back then, you know, people would dress up in funny dresses like Milton Berle and they'd make fun of him. But the whole issue never really came up until I would think the last 20, 25 years. Gay came up, but once again, we didn't understand it because why would a gay person be marrying us? Most of us had no inclination to think, how would a gay man marry a straight woman? And I don't say that these guys went into the marriages to be deceptive or to be with bad will. I really believe they loved their wives to the best of their ability as a gay man. They were fighting it themselves. They didn't want to be gay. And so by marrying someone, they felt that maybe that will change them. If they can love someone enough, those feelings will go away. And I do have a lot of understanding and sympathy to a point. And the point is that once you can't make it go away, and once you're acting on it, you need to be honest with your wife. Because about 20% of the thousands of women that are part of our support network have sexually transmitted diseases, you know, that their husbands came home and gave to them from having, you know, irresponsible sex. And that's the gift of a lifetime that never goes away. And that's why I say in certain cases there is a fault here. You know, if a woman has HIV or she has gonorrhea or she has herpes that lasts forever and it alters all her future relationships, why shouldn't there be some responsibility? Do the courts feel that way at all, do you think?
It depends on the court, depends on the judge, because it's inconsistent. But yes, there should be accountability and responsibility in every situation. And it's what we find is being pretty much ignored anymore. It probably has been for a long time, but since No Fault came in, they don't even want to discuss these kinds of things. And the other part, think about when your people begin to talk, what answers do you have for them? And what if you hadn't taken an interest and you hadn't studied this and you didn't have a healing program, and there, and every day you're hearing these problems come before you? It makes you feel inadequate because you don't have answers. The law doesn't provide for it. You don't have rules that deal with these things properly and fairly. So what we find is the judges get irritated because I think they feel helpless. And sometimes they simply won't hear evidence. They won't hear the truth. They, you know, they want it swept out of their courtroom. So it takes a special court and a special judge to hear out what all the layers are of these problems. And the thing I find that the couples, the pain is worse at the loss of the friendship. They had a friendship, and that friendship was very special. And maybe the marriage couldn't work out. Maybe a lot of things couldn't work out. But when that friendship was put at risk, that is the final grief. And they do suffer over that the most, I find. The romance they can do without. They can deal with other things. But the betrayal part that costs the friendship, that's what they just can't get over.
That's true. I think the greatest feeling of all is the betrayal. And, of course, for the men who go through this, they feel that they've done their duty, quote-unquote, in staying in these marriages for 20, 25 years. As men often say to me, well, I did the right thing. I stayed with my family. I raised the kids. I did what I was supposed to do. And now it's my turn to live my life. And I explained to them, you stayed there for whatever needs you had. It didn't make you a good husband. How could you be a good husband when you're not having telling your wife the truth and making her feel that she's at fault because, you know, you don't want to touch her or be intimate with her? These marriages really do play on a woman's sense of who she is, on her sexuality. Now, these guys rob that from you, and they come up with all kinds of ways to blame you for these problems. They'll never take the responsibility until they're ready to leave. So a lot of the issues, you know, I see sometimes friendships can be maintained, but often women really feel that tremendous sense of betrayal, and that if somebody truly is a friend to you, you know, why are you involved with other men while you're married to me? You know, they could, I think they can understand it better if you come to terms. Yeah, I think if a man's honest and he's not acting on it and he says, look, I know what I am and I just can't keep living like this anymore, but I haven't done anything, it's easier to work with. But when there's been a whole list of, you know, betrayals and the women, you know, sadly, many of the kids find out before the women find out, because kids today are so sophisticated and they understand how to use these computers better than we ever will. And they find the porn on there and the emails and the Craigslist and the ads and all the, you know, gay sites. So that really puts children in a really bad position of being the keeper of the secret, because they're afraid to tell their mothers because it may break up the marriage. Or sometimes when they confront their fathers tell them, well, don't tell your mother, because, you know, it'll only make problems and it doesn't mean anything. So there's lots of issues that we go through that other couples don't go through. You know, they go through, everybody goes through the same sets of problems, so we have, like, added baggage on this and added problems. So I think that many of us are left with that post-traumatic stress disorder because they've been living in marriages where there's a lot of unhappiness and a lot of emotional abuse, some physical abuse, and now they have to go to court, and, you know, they always feel that their husbands who are threatening them, if you go to court, I'm going to say this and that, and I'm going to take the children, you know, all kinds of threats. So a lot of times women just give in, and they don't get what they do deserve because they're afraid to stand up. So would this be a time to get an advocate? Is it allowable in a courtroom for our women?
Absolutely. Critical. And there have been advocates since the beginning of the court system. And they're allowed, called next friends, and they're not even trained. Our advocates are certified, and if you need accommodations, they know how to get them and help you get them, how to monitor and maintain them, and be present in some fashion. I can't get to all of the courts and fly around and sit like I used to and be there with people. So I appear now by Skype and phone. And it's amazing how effective it can be. I'm there. I introduce myself to the court. I let them know what I'm there for. I've prepared with the client. I listen in at the right time. I may interject something if it's needed per the federal law. And it saves the client so much money. And it's an amazing service that I didn't even think of when I was flying all over the country and sitting in courtrooms for hours and hours, which is one of the games that the adversary will play when you have an expert or somebody, they'll hold them out, you know, until a certain time and inconvenience as much as they can and drive up the price. But now with the federal law, we go in with the client, we pass the bar, we sit at the table with them. If we are present in court, and if we're there by phone, we're listening in and available to them anytime they need to call on us.
So can you give our women an idea of, let's say they're going to court, what is the role of the advocate? Could you be more specific to a woman who has no knowledge of this?
Well, our advocates are trained to look for any diagnosis, any problem that you have that could interfere with what we call your executive functionality. In other words, when you go to court, you have to be on your toes, able to speak, able to think on your feet, understand rapid speech, defend yourself, know the law, know the rules. It's a big job, and it's very, very hard for someone that's in emotional pain. Especially when you walk in the courtroom and the other side might walk in and lay a bunch of lies right at your feet. So with that occurring, it's terribly important that we know how to access accommodations. So the kinds of things we do is arrange ahead of time so that our clients can take a break if they need to, if things if they're becoming symptomatic, becoming too stressed. Excuse me, I've got a little bit of a laryngitis thing tonight. I apologize. I'm drinking tea while we speak.
I don't apologize at all.
It happens.
Now,
anyway,
I know this sounds like a silly question, but, you know, you're talking about in court. And because I'm not, you know, familiar with this NESA aspect, maybe you can give me some insight. Let's say some women don't go to court, they go to mediation. Now, would an advocate be allowed to go to that?
Yes, yes. Terribly important for anything, mediation, arbitration, court, anything. You are entitled to have an advocate with you. And if sometimes they just may want to meet informally, and that's okay too. The advocate can serve a purpose by helping so that the client does not get bullied. So it's an odd environment that these people find themselves in. If you have something go wrong and you wind up having to get a divorce or something, that's unfortunate, and you'll have supporters from your church, and your family will sometimes just surround you, etc. When you have an issue of a betrayal of a gay issue in your family, and this comes out as a secret, and everybody's feeling betrayed, they thought you were such a lovely couple, and then there's the bullying. Oh my God, what can go on the job and with the social groups and the places you might go? It is appalling, the kind of bullying and nastiness and shunning, and just it enhances that horrible feeling the woman already has, who has been a sexual failure and didn't understand why, feeling unattractive and all that sort of thing. So I'm just always stunned at how mean people can be to one another. And when a trauma is created because one person caused it upon another, it's a more intense, harder trauma to overcome. So PTSD that is caused by human-on-human mean behavior, intentional, that keeps on, is harder to overcome than an earthquake or an auto accident or something like that.
Karen, I just had a note come in, and this is somebody who lives in Alabama. She asked if I could ask you a question. She's listening to the show. She asked me to say, ask you, can an advocate help you when you are going for a hearing on child custody?
Yes. Absolutely. And let me explain one way how. If you are in an adversarial situation with this person, and they have said, what they always say is, she's crazy. It's a word that has no medical and no legal meaning whatsoever. It's only used to discredit somebody. But they'll call you crazy. And then they start telling how crazy you are. So they say that you can't have custody of the kids because you're crazy. You can't have custody of the kids because of, you know, they'll say you're late picking them up. They'll say all kinds of things. So the importance of the advocate here is that they put a stop to all of that. Anything that talks about you having any kind of psychiatric injury like PTSD, which is not a mental illness. It is an injury. It's an injury like a sprained ankle, and it can heal. So the importance is that nobody is able to ever use anything like that against you. If you go for accommodations in court, it has to be confidential. It is meant to be confidential. It never comes into the courtroom to be a part of the adversarial process.
Now, also, let's say that I want to get an advocate. And certainly I know that you have a training program for advocates, but I don't know how prevalent or where they are. How would I even find an advocate?
Well, if you want one of mine that can do the ADA, you need to contact me right now. I have about 100 trained. I'm working hard on getting many more trained. Of those, about 30 are very active. And so I would have to look for who's active in your area and see if I can link you up. But understand, you don't have to have a trained advocate. It's good because trained advocates can't get bullied out of the court and can't have the games played on them like the general public can. But you can bring a trusted friend or somebody with you. You can bring somebody from one of your healing groups that understands this, and they can be with you, and they can help you through it.
But it would be really better to have one that's trained, and that's why I want to talk to you next a little bit about your training program. Because to be honest with you,
it's pretty important.
I would say, I love your training program. I would say that the overwhelming majority of our women, it's not a negative comment I'm making, so please don't misunderstand it, but by nature, we are caretakers to start with. And we do have that kind of compassion and empathy and understanding that someone who's going to be an advocate needs to have. And I think this is such a wonderful opportunity for women to train to do something where they can be of help, you know, through your online course, where you have women coming from all different levels of education. You don't have to have a degree to do this. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. Anybody that wants
to
help.
You don't have to have a degree. Right.
No, no.
You can get trained.
It's helpful. And then it's 18 hours of training. Yeah. But it's 18 hours of training. It's pretty intensive. And you learn the ADA law. You learn your local rules. You learn how an eight-step program, how to be a counselor coach to somebody going through this kind of thing. And you get what I call some kind of sophistication training where expect this from opposing counsel. Expect this to happen and don't fall for it. Don't let them bait you. We train the women to be mentally tough, to not let the other side bait them and manipulate them and control them. And one technique we use, we call telegraphing. And when the other side walks in, and we can count on it, they walk in and they say, "Your Honor, she's crazy. This is what she did, she that, and whatever." And so we train them when it's their motion to come in and say, "Your Honor, may I make a statement before we get started? My opposition is going to tell you this, 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 and this. Now, I'm prepared to refute all of it if you will give me the time today. But I expect that they will attempt to mislead the court by saying these things." Well, then when they stand up to say them, guess what? You've already cut them off at the knees. So it's just taking the experiences that we have observed, that I've observed for 30 years, go on with these situations and these relationships, and then using the skills that work and help them so that they quit being manipulated. And then they will never be manipulated again in their lives the way they were the first time. You know, we all can be charmed, and sociopaths, they charm judges. They charm court appointees, custody evaluators, they charm. And those that threaten and coercive controllers, they threaten, not verbally and obviously, but through intimidating tactics. They can do it to the court. So we have to be prepared for that.
I'd like to even bring another angle into view about your course, which I am so strongly think is the best thing that any woman can do for herself. But even if you are not going to be an advocate for others, just a small investment of small money compared to getting out of it and time will help you so much in your own life being an advocate for you. Wouldn't you say so?
Yes, so many of my advocates have been through this. And they say, "I want to help somebody else and I want to change it so it never can happen to someone again." And they make good advocates. And yes, I do charge. I have to, because we have no funding.
Mm-hmm.
We are a low-income LLC, and we keep our fees and costs very modest. But what you do when you become an advocate, you open a new income stream for yourself. And a beautiful combination is paralegal and advocate. It really works well.
But even if you're in human services of any kind, and a lot of our women are in the human service field as being, you know, counselors or mental health workers, there are so many different teachers, this is an extra source of income, you know, Dr. Huffer's saying, but also just for yourself, if you're going through a court system, having this knowledge, just being a better advocate for yourself, that's what I meant. That if you go through this court and you're going to court, at least you know how to stand up for yourself and what people can do and can't do, wouldn't you say so?
Yes, so that you know when they will try and get you to not use the federal law. I have it happen over and over again, and it sounds real simple. They go into court, and they need an accommodation, and the access coordinator at the court says, well, the court always allows breaks. The court always is considerate about that. No, that's not what we're asking for. We're saying specifically for me, because I need a break when I get symptomatic, I need to know it's been approved under the regulations of federal law. Because they slough you off by saying, oh, well, we're that way with all our people. No, that's not what we're there for. We're there for something different. An accommodation is apart from what they normally do. And we want it more intense so that we can cue the judge and get a break. We don't just wait for the court to be kind to us. Some of them will be, some won't, and some will play you that way. So it's a very manipulative game. So if you've been manipulated in your relationship and in your marriage,
mm-hmm.
and now you go for help and you find it's a bigger, more powerful layer that can manipulate further, and then you find your adversary, if they've commandeered the finances, if they are borderline, if they are sociopathic, they're on top of it. They got your money. They're playing the court just like they do everyone else. They're in there looking good. You've just done the soccer and taken the kids to school and you're disheveled and you come in and they're looking all sharp and they manipulate everybody. So it's terribly important to know things like telegraphing, the skills that we teach where we don't let them suck us into responding in a way that they want us to respond. In other words, when they tell a falsehood in the court, the last thing I want my client to do is stand up and say, he's lying. That does no good. The judge just writes it off as high conflict. Instead, we have to make note of those things and come back in later and ask for clarification on the record. And we never play it so that the judge thinks it's just two people fighting that can't get along. No, you have a perpetrator and a victim in many cases. And when you do, we have to make that clear to the court. Because they tend to throw them all into high conflict, you know, that category.
Now, let me ask this about the course. This is over, I'm sorry, is it 6 weeks, if I recall? Or?
Well, it depends on how we divide it up. Normally, it's 6 weeks, 3 hours a week. And we do the 3 hours all at once. We do a three-hour session. And I normally do it over a lunch hour during the week, so if people are working, they can take a long lunch or something. And then I conduct the webinar, and they get certified at the end of 18 hours. We give continuing education units for lawyers, for health workers, behavioral health doctors. I've trained physicians. Who, by the way, I haven't had one disagree with me that all of this can cause PTSD. And I ask every group I train, do you disagree with me? Do you see this any other way? And I haven't had one yet that disagreed.
I was just wondering, where does this come into conflict at all with your attorney?
Not usually. If the attorney follows the law, pays attention, and works with us, they end up loving it. They can see the power in it. Plus, it takes that whole burden off the attorney for the person becoming symptomatic. They will work with a client and wonder why, when they finally have to get on the witness stand or something, that they go sideways. And they'll say, my God, I prepared her. What happened? She got symptomatic. And she needed a break and to get back with the program and be able then to use her expressive speech so that she could protect herself. We even with PTSD tend to dissociate. And I have had parents who dissociate in court and they wind up agreeing with things that they didn't mean to agree with because of the way mm-hmm. the attorney worded, and they
exactly.
end up doing themselves so much damage. I have a mother in Iowa that lost parenthood of her three children because she dissociated in the beginning. By the time we got in on the case, it was so late, and we had to, we're still fighting that case because we came in so late and they'd made so much headway that it was very unfair. Very, very unfair.
Terrible. Now, with this course, I just want to let people know that I've directed it towards our particular situation, but I'd like to really expand into what it really is. Working for people in our situation who have post-traumatic stress disorder is a wonderful way to utilize an advocate, but this is advocacy of all kinds of people with disabilities, so that if you're looking, for instance, we have women who are in the mental health field, women who work with clients who have other kinds of problems besides, you know, this is for anybody who has any kind of disability. Am I correct? Physical disability?
Yes, across the board. But we do emphasize non-apparent disabilities because that's where we need to emphasize. The courts are pretty good getting wheelchairs in, hearing devices, visual, that sort of thing. But they are neglecting the many people with the invisible disability, and PTSD is an epidemic that they're going to have
mm-hmm.
to face. Autism is another. One out of
mm-hmm.
60 are being born autistic. We have a lot of autistic people, and they need help in the courtroom. And certain of these situations, you have layers. You will have someone who is bisexual, betrayed, perhaps borderline. And then you'll have, due to the behavior on the other person, PTSD, but underlying that could have been other things. Heart conditions, diabetes, cancer, MS, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time you look at 1 in 4 in our population are affected by a diagnosable invisible disability in many cases. And what is happening to those people as they try and handle their affairs. And normally, when this kind of betrayal comes, the marriage does dissolve. Sometimes peacefully, sometimes they wind up in these awful court battles that are just, they just drain the families dry of money, of energy, of emotion. They just wear the families down.
Yes, and when you're living with somebody who has narcissistic traits or sociopathic traits, some of them are just out to get you because that's how they are. They were out to get you while you were married. And now that you finally have the strength to leave the marriage, it's not like they're willing to just walk away. They have to sit and just keep torturing you. And that's why so many of our women are intimidated and they go into courts feeling so alone, or they go into a mediation expecting to get clobbered before
yeah.
they even get started. Like I read note from one of our women the other night that truly upset me. And she said she just gave in. She said, I just gave them what they wanted just so I could get the paper signed. And she wrote to me and she said, you know, even my lawyer said I shouldn't have done it. She says, but I just felt so, after all these years of fighting and fighting and fighting to get a divorce, and he said he would be willing to sign it, but he's not giving me this, he's not giving me that. And I just thought to myself, I'm just signing anything because I just can't go keep doing this year in and year out, even when I'm not going to be married. And I felt so badly because I thought, wow, you know, she was willing to give up so much just to be free. But maybe if she had had an advocate there for her so she wouldn't have to feel like that, maybe she could have turned the corner around a different way.
It can make all the difference. When you are sitting there under duress, and your attorney is saying, if you don't sign, I'm going to quit. And you have all of them with pressure on you because the attorneys don't know what to do. If you are symptomatic and they can't quite get you where they want you because they don't know the disability laws and that kind of thing, they'll threaten to quit because they simply don't know what to do with you. So as you sit there and you are being forced against your own best interest to sign, think about that. If you have that one extra person that is trained to say, sign nothing, and one of the accommodations that we often ask for is they sign nothing on the spot. Everything they get to take home, and they have 24 or 48 hours to think it over so that they cannot bring that personal pressure on them and make them sign. And many times my clients are, they're really ill, and we need continuances from these courts so that they can get back on their feet. And the court can't know if you are playing a game and it's a ploy, or if you truly need a continuance because you're truly ill. And they very often will accuse you of a ploy. Well, the advocate can make the difference there. We are the liaison between the person and the doctor, the person, the lawyer, the person, and anyone else they need. So we are the ones that can, I always tell the court, Your Honor, we have vetted this case. And if we walk in here with a case, you know that it is, it has been thoroughly vetted, and that they qualify under the ADA, and they need the accommodations, or they simply don't have access.
Now, do the judges ever give you a difficult time?
What did you say?
Do the judges ever give you a difficult time?
Not really. Most of them are pretty tolerant of us in the court, and some actually appreciate us. I sometimes have them say, I'm glad you're here. They'll say to me, because they want to be sure that when that person agrees or does whatever they do, that it's not going to be challenged. So I haven't had a bad time. In 30 years, I have to say mostly we've made good headway. What I run into are blind spots and where they just aren't trained. You know, they just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's get back to just one more thing, and if you don't mind going back to the divorce in every state and every county having to be so different. Is there any way to change this? Like to have a national divorce law that everybody has to abide by? Does this have to be a state-by-state decision?
No, no. What I've done is develop a standard of care under the ADA rubric, federal law, and I'm asking, I'm in touch with a disability vice president of certain services out of the White House. We met with Patrick Kennedy the other night with the Special Olympics, and I'm asking these people to back us to get adopted a national standard of care for people that have a diagnosis of any kind and that are having to go into litigation. And I'm hoping that we just finished the first 25-year anniversary of the ADA. And you know what? People that I work with, they'll say, I'm not disabled. I work and I can do fine. And I say, I know you can. And I know you appear just fine. But now let's talk about what happens when you go into court. And then I do a dysfunctional assessment with them. How do they do getting their mail when they're in litigation? Can they go to the mailbox comfortably? What about when they get subpoenaed? When they're driving to the courthouse, what happens to them? When they're looking at their legal papers and dealing with them? When someone does something really mean to you in that court, tries to cost you your parenthood, you know, whatever. And by the time we go through it, I say, most people function just fine outside of the court, but when they go in, that's when the symptoms hit. That's when it all hits you. And that's the most critical time for you to be able to function and to protect yourself and your children and your assets.
And that's because there's so much at stake at that point. You're not just going in to view a court case. You're going in to fight for your life. And that's where I think people become overwhelmed, because even if they could be strong doing listening somewhere else, when it comes to themselves and so much being put on the line, that you could lose your children, you could lose your home, you could lose, you know, your finances, you could be left with virtually nothing, then I think people do get so nervous prior to this. I know that our women that I work with, this is like their biggest fear, that on that day their life is just going to fall apart totally. And that's why I think it's so wonderful that every woman going through this, there must be a way to get this word out, that you need to have an advocate with you, and that I know that Dr. Huffer would be happy to supply somebody in your area, a trained advocate, And even though you say if people go
near
and be
to
your
you
advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, to have a trained advocate who can stand up for you, I think this is the most important thing in the world. And, you know, even if it's a little expense to get an advocate, I'm not saying it won't, you know, cost you something, but it will cost you so much more in the long run when you don't have an advocate.
Oh,
when
it
you can't
saves
fight for
them
yourself,
so
right?
much money. Yes, if they have an
mm-hmm.
advocate from the beginning, we then work with them on budgeting out their money so that they don't walk in and give a five-figure retainer to the first lawyer and then find that they don't have a lawyer pretty soon. And then what do? Then they're going in alone, and then they find that they're not treated well in the court and they don't know what to do. So you have to think before you give a lawyer one dime what you're going to get for that, how long it will last. And of course we pay lawyers and we have to be fair, but we don't go in and just hand them a lot of money right away. I advise my clients not to give them more than $5,000 at a time and then make a clear
mm-hmm.
understanding as to where that $5,000 takes them. Because 70% of our cases do not go to completion with a lawyer in our court. They go part of the way, the money runs out, and the lawyer is gone.
Wow. Now, will an advocate be able to go through this with you before you even get to the lawyer part? Just getting an advocate the first step, do you think?
That's the purpose of doing shows like yours and everything, to say before you start, get an advocate and get yourself set up, because we come in too late too many times where they're broke, they're sick, they've lost so much, and then they call and say, we didn't even know you existed. So we're trying to get the word out so that they're never alone and they're never exploited.
Well, you can be sure that I'm going to be getting that word out in our next newsletter. But more importantly, for women who are just starting this process, this is a good time for you to find yourself an advocate, and if you go through Dr. Huffer, she can let you know if there is anyone in your area. And would the best way to be to contact you through the website?
They can go to the website or my email, legalabuse@gmail.com. Email me directly, and I'll answer them personally.
Okay, that's wonderful. Also, even if they're not taking your course, can we talk a little bit? It's still important to buy your book, because your book really does share so much information, The Legal Abuse Syndrome.
I'm glad you said that, because the book is designed to be self-help. It's designed to be an inexpensive help to anybody that can't afford anything else. So, yes, and they can go to the website for that. It's equalaccessadvocates.com, plural advocates, equalaccessadvocates.com.
Right, and I'll send that out in my next newsletter for August, so everybody will have all the email addresses for the website and also to write to Dr. Huffer, or you can write to me in the meantime. But if you go on Amazon, you can find her book there just by even putting in her name, but if not, certainly putting in the name of the book, which will certainly, there's two books you have. Well, actually, I think you have four books out, am I right?
Well, I have two. The latest one is Unlocking Justice. And the first one is Overcoming the Devastation of Legal Abuse Syndrome.
Okay, so Unlocking Justice, it says, using the techniques in this book may well lead to revolutionary movement towards humanizing our legal system for those most vulnerable among us, an aging population, those with no apparent disabilities, PTSD, traumatic brain injury, ADHD, depression, anxiety, autism. You know, I really forgot to bring that up also. Depression, that counts also as a disability, am I right?
Absolutely. And anxiety, yes.
Okay.
And people say, well, I'm depressed, but I'm really okay.
Okay, good. So there's many different angles that an advocate can help you find when you have to go to court. And that's why this can really be life-saving for many of you, money-saving for all of you, and a great career move for some of you who want to do something or, you know, just make some extra money doing something you enjoy doing. Many of our women are helpers by nature, and some of you enjoy legal shows or watching what people do in court, and now's your opportunity to learn for yourself And this is not going to take years. It's going to be in a matter of a few weeks that you can be trained as an advocate and out there working. So I think it's a wonderful opportunity, and I'll certainly be promoting this in our upcoming newsletter with all the information about the workshops and how you can write to Dr. Huffer and also get on the list in case you're looking to, you know, join that workshop. So do you have any final words you would like to leave us with?
Yes, I really do. I want to say that sometimes people are kind of afraid. They say, oh, what if I go into court? What if I get in trouble? What if they get mad at me? The federal law protects advocates. You cannot be harassed, intimidated, interfered with in any way. If you are helping a person with a disability, there is nothing that can be done to you that you might fear like that, including the bullying that often goes on. It is unlawful, and you would have a federal action against the people if they behave that way. So when we go into court, we make it clear what law we work under. And sometimes they don't know anything about it, and they'll go to the back and look it up, and they come out, and trust me, the red carpet will often be rolled out for you because they understand federal law supersedes. The Department of Justice doesn't take every complaint or every lawsuit, but the ones they take, they mean business with. And we are working hard to get in the same category with them as with the court, that when we show up with someone, it's been vetted and they can hang their hat on it being a real case. And so don't be afraid to be an advocate, and nothing feels better to me than being in that situation where someone's trying to bully and play a game, and you quote the law, we tell the truth and quote the law and follow the law, and you see it turn the case around. And I've had attorneys literally walk out where they'll say, you know what, these people are going to help you, and they turn around, and that's the end of it, and they quit the game because they know it's basically over. So it's a very satisfying profession. It's really and you work with the best people on earth. You know, these are some of the most honest, caring, decent people that are our clients. So that's a gift. And protecting them is an honor.
Everybody going through this, before you get too far into your divorce, you need to get an advocate. And Dr. Huffer would be happy to see if there's somebody in your area who can do that from her organization, because they're fully trained and they know how to be advocates. So before you even get to the point of picking a lawyer, can an advocate help you with that too?
Yes. We don't pick them for them, but we do really help them to, during the interviews and that kind of thing. A lot of times I'll sit in on those on the phone, and we ask the lawyer, are they familiar with the ADA? Are they willing to work with it? Do they understand my role and how we can enhance their work? And so, yes, we absolutely can be there and help with that.
Well, I think this is all new, exciting news that our women should know about. And I really can't thank you enough. I hope that once you're done this new session in the fall, maybe you'll come back and just give us some new tips and some other things to look out for. But we certainly will be looking for women to join this course and women who can use the advocacy. I mean, this is a win-win-win all the way
it
around.
Really is.
And I'm just, it is. And I just can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. And in our August newsletter, once again, I'll be announcing your upcoming classes so women can get ready for that. And thank you so much for being our guest and sharing so much and teaching us so much. I mean, boy, I feel like I have a whole new battleground here of knowledge to tell people. I feel so much better coming out of this show, because I really didn't realize how many angles that, you know, not just sitting in the courtroom, but prior to the courtroom, helping you with an attorney, you know, before the whole process even begins. I thought it was just get to the courtroom and somebody's there, but that's not the case at all. An advocate can be with you from day one.
We're in the case with the person. That's right. They're not alone. Bonnie, thank you so much, and we've only begun.
All right. That's great, and I hope to get to actually meet you in person now that you're a part of New York. And Dr. Huffer's now joined a new college. I'm so excited, because it's one of the most prestigious colleges in the whole world, John Jay College in New York, correct?
That's right. I've become more important since we talked last.
Mm-hmm. I am really impressed. I was always impressed, but now I'm super. I mean, there's very few people who have that opportunity or that talent, so that only shows how great you really are. And I'll look forward to hearing
you.
More about that next time. All right, everybody, have a wonderful night and learn a lot from tonight's show. If you have any questions, you can always write to me, and I can always pass you Dr. Hupper's information. And we'll sign out, and we'll be back again with you next week. And have a wonderful night. We'll play our going away music. And good night to everybody.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the line of a dark black night. Black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. You are only waiting for this moment to arise.